A three. A two. A one. Well, it got hot early in 2025. It's Palm Sunday, and it's warm in Austin, Texas. We had a cold front last weekend, and that feels like 100 years ago. But you're cool because you're here at the home of One Magical Hour, a Matthew and Schaefer podcast spectacular. People are having trouble remembering this podcast because it hasn't been recorded in a while. I tell Schaefer not to apologize for that, but it's literally been 2 months. But we're here. We're back. I am at the ivy-covered casa. I am ready to talk to my podcast ride or die. Spoiler alert. It's Schaefer Hall. I've come across town this afternoon to sit down with this guy and record episode 200, the 197th episode. And this episode is really going to take the podcast back to its roots, which is full of poor preparation and
poor choices
have been made.
What it's all about.
That got us here. And I'm just going to turn it over to my main man. You know him. You love him. Schaefer Hall. Schaefy?
And if you're casting in Matthew's backyard, where the commuter rail roars outside the fence, please remember to use a good recording software. We recommend one like GarageBand.
Whoa, that was folksy. Was that a Bob Dylan song?
That was a Bob Dylan song.
What song is that?
Girl from the North Country.
Girl from the North Country.
Which, interesting, I just learned, Jeff and I have been working on that song for a while now. I think we do it pretty good.
Jeff the bartender, who you're in a band with. And what are you guys called?
Sex Captain.
Sex Captain. Oh, okay, go on.
We're probably going to change the name. We're going to be recording an album.
You're changing the name?
We're probably going to change the name.
Have you done any consulting with your marketing consultant?
A little more family friendly. Yeah, we can workshop it. You're on the online.
I only pointed it out because I just heard it like a week ago. You said Jeff and I are called Sex Captain. And I thought it was evocative.
You're originally called Captain Sex and the Sex Captains.
See, now that's marketing. I know the desire in contemporary.
It to Captain Sex, and later it became Sex.
There's a strong desire in contemporary American society to have everything be very brief. So I guess Sex Captain is better. Like, nobody wants to say a sentence about a band.
Yeah.
Remember, they will know us by the trail of our dead, or those kind of bands.
Yeah.
Guided by voices. Good, I mean, that's like,
I love a good long name.
I like a long name too. How you doing, buddy?
Good. Great. It's great to be talking to you.
It's funny that you would play a Bob Dylan song because I watched the Bob Dylan movie. Have you seen it?
I have. I'm so excited. I just watched it last week.
Yeah. What did you think?
I loved it.
You loved it? Okay.
Admittedly, I am.
You're a Bob Dylan fan.
I'm a big Bob Dylan fan.
Uh-huh.
I'm a 49-year-old white guy.
Are you just 49?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 2025.
Right.
It's my mid-century.
Yeah.
October 23rd, baby. We're going to throw a big old party.
It's coming up.
Get ready, One Magical Nation. I expect you all to be there.
Are we talking about Schaefer's 50th birthday right now? Okay. I guess that's a little teaser.
I guess we'll do it crazy.
We're better at spoilers than teasers.
Yeah, we're more of a spoil than a tease.
So you liked them? You liked the Bob Dylan movie.
I did. What did you think of it?
Okay. So, you know, we've talked about this before, how I'm not that into Bob Dylan. And you, and that comment, even now, I can see in your eyes.
And I tried to hide my disdain.
I can see in your eyes that it makes you think, who am I with?
Yeah.
Who are these people? Who's this guy that I've brought into my life?
Riding or dying with this podcast guy.
I'm doing a podcast with a guy who doesn't really care for Bob Dylan.
No, I try to give everybody their opinion.
I think in 2025, the new Matthew realizes he's been wrong about Bob Dylan all of his life, you know, and I would just say
your opinion of him has changed.
Well, my opinion has changed. The movie helped, strangely enough, helped me sort of reshape my opinion about Bob.
Cool. Well, that's great.
I think that,
Everybody needs, I always say this about everybody just needs a way in, a context or just a little thing. Actually, even context is too strong a word, you know? Maybe you just hear the right song and the weather's just right, or you're with a nice lady or having a nice dinner and the song comes on. And that gives you a way in, and then that can unlock a whole catalog for you, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying. Like, you can have context about an artist. And you can learn a lot about them and you can know a lot about them. Or you can have had experiences, especially with music. And I think in my lifetime, I just haven't had like times in my life when I was listening to Bob, you know? And so I didn't really, first thing, let me say that I have always had this weird feeling about folk music, and it's about my white guilt, and it's about not wanting to be seen as a hillbilly myself.
Yeah. So now this is that the other thing, you know, is
convoluted.
What makes me sad is when somebody doesn't like a style of music. I have a friend who is from rural New York.
Okay.
And when he was growing up in the early 90s in rural New York, the jocks who used to beat him up for being weird all listened to classic rock. So now he associates classic rock with that. Like Neil Young, you know, Neil Young is the furthest, you know, he's a hippie. He's the furthest away from playing football and beating up hippies that you can get. But he associates them with that music, with these people. So it's kind of just ruined for him. And actually, I'm pleased to report that he has a wife who's really into it, and she's changed the context for him. And now he understands it a little better. But for a long time, he was like, no, I categorically dislike all classic rock because that's the weightlifting, you know, jocks who used to beat us up for riding our skateboards. That's really sad. I'm just sorry to get preachy, but so
get off that soapbox.
I love hearing a story about it. So Matthew, let me ask you this: what was it about the Dylan in the movie who tickled your fancy and made you want to?
Well, the movie
reconsider.
Okay. Well, let me ask you a question. Does it tell the story right?
I think it does, yeah.
It does, okay. See, I came at the movie ignorant, like most movies that I come to. And
I think that there's some moments where they've mythologized, but that kind of keeps with Bob Dylan as a character. Bob Dylan's been mythologizing himself his whole life. And they go into, you know, his girlfriend is like, you were never in the damn circus or in the carnival. You know, he keeps saying that it was back in his carnival days.
I see.
She was like, you were a high schooler in suburban Minneapolis. You know, a rich Jewish family. Oh. You were never in the carnival. What are you talking about?
Well, I got totally drawn in the opening scene of the movie where he's thumbing his way into the city.
So great, wasn't it?
And then he gets out of the car, and you see him. He's just a kid, and he's like on this sojourn to meet his hero.
Yeah,
Pete Seeger, right? Oh yeah, no, Woody. He wants to go see Woody Guthrie in the hospital, and I mean, that's really cool, you know, an artist who is working in a style and goes up to the master and he's like, check this out. And the master's like, the master who Woody Guthrie, I guess, has Huntington's disease. Is that right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
And he's in this sanatorium and Bob comes to him and plays in the song and he loves it. Like that, for me as an artist, to be a young artist, to go find your hero and be like, hey, see what I made? And then the Woody Guthrie's like, you know, what's the word for this? He sort of like,
blessed him.
He's the gatekeeper.
Anointed him.
Yeah. He anointed them as the, you know, here's a voice in this genre that's gonna do something. This is 1961, right?
Yeah, everybody heard it, knew it was something special, you know. Just,
okay.
I think it was so.
Anyway, the storytelling of the movie was amazing.
I thought it was.
And it drew me into the story of Bob Dylan in a way I never had known. It was a story I had never heard before, quite honestly. I mean, I'd heard some of the names. I've heard the name Woody Guthrie. I've heard the name Pete Seeger. I've heard Pete Seeger talk to Fresh Air, Terry Gross.
Oh, cool. I didn't hear that.
Couple weeks before I saw the movie, I heard an interview between Pete Seeger and Terry Gross. And then I thought that Ed Norton did just such an amazing job playing the Pete Seeger character.
I really did. That was a very, very sweet performance.
Right? Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I definitely did too. I thought it was really neat the way they handled the, you know, the biopic thing. Just did a very specific 4 years in Dylan's life, and it's interesting because Dylan's very much a guy who's gone through a bunch of different variations of, you know, he's consistently recreated himself, and you know, his way to keep art interesting to him, I think.
I mean, that's what all good popular artists do, is recreate themselves album by album, you try new things.
Taylor Swift do it, you watch Kanye West do it, or
Madonna's my favorite.
Madonna,
Yeah,
she definitely did some interesting stuff too. And then when the time came, she came back to, you know, like I feel like it's probably like what, Ray of Light, that kind of. Well, no, that was her EDM record.
Look, we can have another podcast about Madonna.
Yeah.
We're talking about Bob Dylan right now.
Right, you are. I really enjoyed. So I enjoyed having that very specific time. You know, it took from getting off, you know, getting out of the car in New York City, all the way to the Newport Folk Festival, 1964. So exactly 4 years, I think, almost to the date.
That's the whole movie.
That's
the whole time frame
and
of the
was,
movie.
And those were basically his folk years, because that was when he recorded Like a Rolling Stone. That was when he electrified and he went from a folk singer to being a rock and roll singer. That was a big deal for everyone, wasn't it?
So the movie dealt with that, right? Yeah, sure. It dealt with.
And there's where I don't know if they took some liberties there. Like, remember when like Pete Seeger's wife is telling him like, no, don't. She steps between him and the soundboard, and she's like, don't do this. Don't shut this down. Oh. This is the new, you know. Listen to what he's saying. The times they are changing. You know. Mm. Like, I don't know if all that happened really, but it was sure made for a good yarn.
Well, it was a fantastic movie about a subject that I didn't even really, you know, when they said, oh, a Bob Dylan biopic, I wasn't like, oh, that sounds like something for me, but I really enjoyed it. And I found a whole new love of Bob Dylan, and he's indistinguishable from Timothy Chalamet now, just like that happened with Val Kilmer and Jim Morrison.
I thought
in the 90s with the Doors.
I thought Timothy Chalamet did a delightfully cheeky job. I thought he had a lot of fun with that role, wouldn't you say?
He was good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some of that dialogue they wrote for him just sounds so just Dylan-esque. You know, who knows if he really said it or not, but they just definitely did some. I wish I could remember it.
Well, it's not just the dialogue. It's the way in which he talks, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fascinating.
Jeff the bartender's got all those lines memorized and can say them for you just like that. It's pretty funny. Prices. And, you know, it's really cool for me.
You know, you should stop promoting your band here at the podcast.
To have been, you know, different times in my life, I've discovered, rediscovered. The great thing about Dylan is that he's got so much music. And it's so varied that you know, that you can rediscover. I was hearing a podcast with Ezra Koenig from Vampire Weekend, and he said he was walking around. He was in Tokyo, I guess, on tour, and he was walking around listening to Spotify on his headphones, and he got to this song called Brownsville Girl. It's off of one of Dylan's records in the 80s that people mostly dismiss, and he was like, the song just stopped in his tracks. He was like, How have I never heard the song?
Did you say Brownsville Girl?
Brownsville Girl, yeah.
Like Brownsville, Texas?
I don't know, because there's a Brownsville neighborhood in Brooklyn, too.
Okay.
So I don't know. Right. I don't know which. I think.
Right.
I think it's probably the.
Bob doesn't have any Texas connections.
I don't know. Like, Chris Christopherson's from Brownsville, so.
Okay.
And, you know, they definitely hung out building Christopherson.
I'm from Lubbock, for the record.
What's way north? That's about a 12-hour drive from Brownsville. I know because I've made that drive before. That's an incredible drive.
The movie helped me understand how folk music is related to beat poetry.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I never sort of made that connection. I just thought it was like hillbilly yeehaw, you know?
It's really.
And then there was this.
Kind of where hillbilly yeehaw and beat poetry kind of mix.
There was this subtext of gatekeeping, right? Yeah. Like, you know, Pete Seeger's kind of the gatekeeper, and the organizers of the Newport Folk Festival, they're telling you what's folk. It's just a guy with a guitar.
Defining scene, yeah.
But Bob was making this bridge, right,
yeah,
to the Black community to some degree.
Yeah.
And he's bringing blues and jazz and rock and roll inside the tent of folk, right? Was that what the...
Yeah, yeah.
I felt like the movie, I enjoyed it. I learned a lot. I felt like it got a little preachy, maybe.
Maybe.
Did it get a little heavy-handed?
Yeah. Well, I mean, any biopic of an artist is going to get heavy-handed, I think. Okay. You know?
Well, it was a good one.
They're going to lay it on thick when they can.
Who do you think's going to play me in the biopic?
Good question.
Probably not born yet, right?
How about Stanley Tucci?
You want somebody who's 15 years my senior?
Yeah, man,
how much older is Stanley Tucci?
I was just thinking of a handsome man with dark hair.
I'm not going to Google this right now because we're podcasting. But I thought you would say something epic.
How about Jason Statham?
There you go.
Thank you.
Jiminy Christmas. Can you imagine a One Magical Hour movie with Jason Statham and...
Phil Hoffman, unfortunately, but he passed away.
Jack Black. Did you say Phil Hartman?
Phil Hoffman. Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, right.
Easy.
All right, PSH. Well, who cares?
How about...
We're past...
Zach Galifianakis could play me pretty well.
Zach Galifianakis could do you. Jonah Hill?
Let's go with Zach Galifianakis.
What about...
Jonah Hill has lost too much weight. Ozempic.
What about... who's the comedian?
Tom Selleck?
That's what I was going to say. Tom Selleck. Yes. Jason Statham.
Tom Selleck and... What did I say? Oh, what did I say for you?
We're beyond the event horizon, right? So we can resurrect Tom Selleck, right? To act with Jason Statham.
Wait, Tom Selleck still alive, though?
Hey, Siri. Is Tom Selleck still alive? Let's see what she says.
Tom Selleck was born the 29th of January, 1945, and is 80 years old.
Hey.
Okay, so maybe not the best casting choice. Let's let's fire that casting director. No, who was I thinking of? The
Sidney Poitier.
Come on, we're casting here. Come on, we're casting. Who's gonna? Hey, get at us. Who's gonna play Schaefer in the One Magical Hour biopic? I think Jason Momoa.
Right.
How about that?
Okay.
I was just thinking about Jack Black and Jason Momoa because the Minecraft movie is on.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we got a big podcast for you here. I know we've just been wasting time talking about the Bob Dylan movie thus far, but we have some things going on today.
Tonight. About Dylan. I guess I could just talk about Dylan all day.
So yeah. I wanted to talk some more stuff about Dylan. So hold on. We'll do the rest of the podcast in a minute. I wanted to ask you a question.
Okay.
At the end of the movie, it says Bob has recorded 55 albums. Shafi, how many of those albums have you listened to? Because I think that I have listened to like 1.274% of that.
I guess I would.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't even know how many Bob Dylan's. But there's two different things going on here. There's Bob Dylan's songs, right? Because he mm-hmm. wrote songs for other people too, right? And other people recorded his songs. So maybe I know some Bob Dylan songs that I don't even know is a Bob Dylan song.
Yeah, that's probably true.
And
he's done like Christmas albums. And he's done jazz standard records. Seriously. So
how many you think?
And there's bootleg records.
You think 55 counts bootlegs?
I think it does because they released the bootlegs.
Is that right?
As official records. Oh. Yeah, there's the whole bootleg series.
Oh, well, we got 200 bootlegs.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we got old Dylan Beat, right? I'm going to say 99%. I was like, I feel like at this point I actually have.
You've heard 99% of it? Is that right?
But I might have missed one here and there.
Wow.
I think I can probably say 99%.
We are at different ends of the spectrum on that.
And that wasn't true because I had my own moment, kind of like I was talking about Ezra Koenig with Brownsville Girl. I had my own moment. He's got a record called Infidels that's kind of his reggae record. And I had never really messed with that too much. And I was driving, I was doing some Lyft driving. I was way up on 183. And 5 o'clock traffic one Friday night, listening to Jody Denberg on KUTX.
Uh-huh.
And this song came on, and I was like, gosh, this reggae song has got this guy doing a really weird Bob Dylan impersonation. And then I realized that it was Bob Dylan. It was this song called Joker Man that like tore my soul apart when I actually listened to it and put it back together again. It was the most amazing song I've ever heard. It was the same thing for me. I was like, why didn't anybody tell me about this song? This song, Joke Rant, one of my top five all-time favorite songs now. And I'd never even part of his forgotten catalog of albums that didn't rate well critically or commercially. And
I wish Outkast was like Bob Dylan. I wish there was some secret Outkast that I'm going to find someday.
That would be cool, right?
Yeah.
You wish it for a lot of
I mean, I think what I have is like, well, you know, I told you that... Manish had me listen to the Doechii Tiny Desk. What I have are a bunch of artists that have been influenced by Outkast,
mm-hmm.
and that they are making some great music now.
Yeah,
it is amazing when you're really into an artist and they're prolific, and you stumble upon something.
Brand new thing, yeah. Jody Denberg blows your mind by spinning some wax on a Friday night over the old school FM radio.
Yeah, I mean if I didn't have such a bad attitude about Picasso, like I could probably be in that boat too. You know what I mean? I really contempt for Picasso. So Pablo Picasso
was never called an asshole.
Okay. Well, we're podcasting here.
Movies. I got a funny story about a movie.
And just to sell the sizzle, we're going to talk to Megan about Malmageddon tonight?
Yes. Okay. We got Megan coming up too.
Okay.
Malmageddon, folks.
Okay.
We'll give her a call in just a minute.
Yeah.
Also, a Best Picture nominee is the movie Conclave.
Conclave?
Yeah.
Is that about Catholics?
Yeah, it's about selecting the Pope.
Selecting the Pope. And there's like a puff of white smoke?
Something like that, yeah.
Okay.
The Archbishops get together. This movie, it was nominated for...
You know what? That seems natural.
That's normal.
Yeah, that just seems like, you know, just humans being humans. It's cool.
So do you know that I have an uncle who's an archbishop? My Uncle Kurt?
I did not know that.
Yeah. We should...
Did you know that I'm not Catholic?
I wonder if we could get him on the Catholic... He probably couldn't really do the cast. He's too high profile, but that'd be awesome. Because he is really he's a special, interesting person.
What if the new goal of this podcast became, let's get your archbishop who's an uncle on a recording?
Because, like, little side note about
squad him, goals.
He also has a doctorate in mathematics. So.
Okay, well, that sort of tracks. That's like, isn't that like that the Fibonacci sequence or the?
Sure.
No, wait. What were the movies with Tom Hanks and the Catholic conspiracy?
Oh.
What are you talking? What's that called? Isn't that like the Da Vinci Code?
Speaking about commercial fiction that is not necessarily kind to the Catholic Church, but
okay, let's get back to Conclave. Sorry, I didn't mean to bring up another commercial fiction that's not kind of Catholic Church.
I mean, I'm just a side note about Uncle Kurt all day too,
Boy, this is your mom's brother?
Yeah.
Is an archbishop?
Yeah.
Oh my god. You mean Kurt from the sailboat?
Yeah, from the sailboat. You got it. God, and the aquarium. Yeah, you know Uncle Kurt.
I mean the nexuses that you find in One Magical Hour.
So this movie Conclave.
Okay.
I was thinking about, like, there was that Billy Bob Thornton show Landman, that was about like a West Texas petroleum geologist.
Okay.
Which is hilarious because, like, my mom's family is mostly petroleum geologists. So, and of course, Manish was a petroleum geologist too. I spent my time around them. Like, even I knew that a lot of Landman's petroleum geology, in air quotes, was really, really, very silly. And I was thinking, so there were some text threads between, like, you know, various people just laughing about the inconsistencies in Landman, you know.
Okay.
From petroleum job. So I was thinking about this movie Conclave, and I was like, how funny would that be if Uncle Kurt and a few other archbishops had this text thread going about silly inconsistencies in Conclave? Like, no, that's not really how it is. And then I was like, it's
Do you think archaeologists felt that way about Indiana Jones?
Or that too. Yeah, exactly. And so the funny thing was, like, I am in the unusual position of being able to just text an archbishop and ask him, you know,
have you heard my new podcast, Text an Archbishop?
So last night I did that. I texted Uncle Kurt and I said, you know, funny thing, I heard this podcast talking about this movie Conclave. I haven't seen it, but it got me thinking, imagining, you know, if, you know, y'all have a text and, you know, just joking about that. But I don't know if I worded it. Exactly, where I guess I could pull it up, but it doesn't matter. Because he just texted back, I haven't seen it. And then this morning,
do you think his phone is being controlled by the Masons?
Oh, yeah, whatever. Okay, settle down, Dan Brown.
Sorry.
Dr. What's his name?
Sorry. Conspiracy Jones over here.
So this morning, I was laying in bed, I was thinking about it, and I was like, man, I hope that he didn't think that I was like trolling him. Like, I don't know anything about this movie Conclave. Like, it could paint the Catholic Church in a very negative way. And then maybe I text him about this. I got all spun up in my head about it.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I text him. I was like,
not a good feeling.
I was like, hey, I hope you don't think I was trolling. I promise you I wasn't trying to be obnoxious. I was just really just laughing about the idea that, you know, that you guys would be making fun of this movie for not getting it right. It's like, I know that Hollywood and the Roman Catholic Church probably don't have necessarily the best relationship.
You don't think they're on the best of terms? Hollywood and the Roman Catholic Church?
And he texted
Holly back. Weird?
He was like, no, absolutely. I wasn't worried about you being a troll. He said, I've always thought of you as more of an orc.
Oh.
Just a bit of really funny humor from a very classy, funny guy, you know?
Okay. And so you have a good relationship with your Uncle Kurt.
Oh, yeah, I do. No, definitely.
Yeah.
I texted him back and I said, I identify as a Sasquatch.
Ah, nice. Nice.
And that was the extent of our conversation.
I can see the Archbishop. I can see Jason Momoa texting with his uncle in this scene, you know. Actually, I identify as a Sasquatch, and everybody goes, yeah.
Tune in next time for another edition of
Is that a good movie?
Conversations with the Archbishop.
Conclave?
I don't know.
Oh, you haven't seen it yet?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, I thought you were about
to... That's what got me worried about it. I was like, what if they said horrible things about it? You know, maybe I just like...
Oh, right.
But I was talking with old friend Derek Mix today, and he said...
You were talking to Derek Mix today?
Yeah. And I told him this story.
You are the Nexus.
And he said that he both read the book Conclave, which was excellent, and saw the movie. It was very good too. He said he didn't really feel like it was, there was anything, you know, problematic about it.
Wasn't like a chop job?
No, nothing like that. So good, happy outcome in all accounts. And maybe I will watch Conclave. Two thumbs up from Derek, you know.
Well, join us for episode 201, One Magical Hour, where we review Conclave. How many avocados I wonder is Conclave gonna get?
What if we could get the Archbishop to watch it too? We have a conversation about Conclave with the Archbishop on a podcast.
I mean, something tells me
I need to settle down.
Some kind of
settle down, Schaefer.
There's some official business that the Archbishop is not going to be able to just give his free thoughts about the movie from Hollyweird called Conclave.
Speaking of,
I know nothing about the movie, by the way.
Speaking of official business by friends of the show, should we give Megan a call?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Bring, bring.
Hey, Megan, how's it going?
Hey, it's fantastic. How are you guys?
Great to have you on the show.
Thanks for joining us.
Having me.
Always a pleasure.
So we haven't talked to you for a year since the eclipse, and you have another big thing coming up in Hillsboro. What's that?
We have a thing coming up April 17th through 20th, and it's called Mallmageddon. Because we are going to destroy the Hillsboro Outlet Mall. But before we do, we're going to have a massive party to celebrate and remember how fantastic it was back when it was fantastic.
Whoa.
The 17th through the 20th, that's a Thursday through Sunday, Easter weekend. And each of those 4 days will have the carnival there. But on Friday and Saturday nights, we're standing up a bunch of extra 90s themed experiences. So there will be a rage room where people can go in and smash stuff. There will be a 90s themed dance club playing all of the hits that we remember. There will be a lounge streaming classic MTV, VH1 music videos from back in the day, and maybe the occasional, you know, talk soup. There will be a...
What?
So cool. Megan...
Wait.
Would you say that that folks in the community are sentimental about this mall, and why would that be?
The Outlet Mall was where all of us, you know, who are a certain age, had our first jobs. You know, I was looking through pictures. There's going to be a space we're calling the Mallzeum, where there will be pictures and mementos and all kinds of kits from back in the day. And I saw a picture from the opening of the chocolate factory. And there's this, you know, 18-year-old kid in an apron who was their first chocolatier. And he's now the mayor of Hillsboro.
Shut up.
You know, I can remember being 16 and, you know, working the counter at 9 West. And my buddy Kristen was two doors down at Naturalizer, you know, and the cute boys worked down at, you know, at the other end of the mall at Van Heusen and Wemco. And like,
what's your title? What's your job in Hillsboro?
I am the city manager.
You're the city manager. Okay. I thought you were the mayor of Hillsboro. Right. The city manager. Yes.
City manager.
You're the one who really runs the show.
Theoretically, my job is to do lots of practical things, but occasionally we also do crazy things like Mallmageddon. Deeply personal. And, you know, the experience that Hillsboro had, where we had been this sleepy little town, there wasn't a lot going on, and then we had this outlet mall, and all of a sudden there were thousands and thousands of people from all over the state shopping in Hillsboro all the time. You know, everybody's wedding presents, all of our wedding stuff came from the outlet mall. All of our clothes came from the outlet mall. All of our kids' clothes, I mean, all you know, Children's Place and Kitchen Collection and there was a chic store called Spring Made Wamsutta, and that, you know, that's what we all went to college with.
You can really sum up entire lives.
You know, it just, every piece of our lives was connected to the mall in all of these different ways. And all of the sales tax from that heyday did a lot for the city of Hillsborough. And the weird thing about when something is going up and then it starts to go down is the going up is seen like it's going to be this forever trajectory. And then when it starts to go down, people perceive that as the anomaly.
Story of my life, sister.
Oh, you know, we just had a rough year, but next year, you know, and so if you look at the budgets, you know, they're always budgeting for sales tax to be what it used to be, and then it never was. And so for Hillsborough, it was kind of a hard, it was a hard drop to come to terms with the decline. And so going from being wonderful to this thing that is just kind of a shame, you know, so like if you see somebody and say, oh, they say, hey, what are you doing now? I said, well, you know, I'm in Hillsborough, and inevitably the response is, oh, isn't it a shame about the outlet mall?
Silver lining, the Hillsborough outlet mall doesn't have to deal with a massive tariff war.
Right. Yeah, zero imports. I'll tell you that right now. Zero imports here, unaffected.
Yeah. So you said nine West, but you quit because senior year we were going on road trips. All of us, we took to just driving all over Texas to meet each other up.
Oh, you were driving to Houston to see Schaefer.
I was driving to Houston to pick up Christy Keefe, and then Christy and I would drive to Austin, where we might meet up with Schaefer and Jameson. Or there was one time I know we were all at Houston and went to the zoo. That was pretty spectacular.
That was a fun day.
And then there were camping trips. We went to Garner State Park, which is, you know, towards the west from here, and then we went to East Texas and aborted that mission early because of spiders, as I recall.
Psychedelics played heavily into a lot of these activities, isn't it?
Yeah, there was a lot going on.
Without going into too many details.
Let's right, not go. Right, right. Let's not do details. This is not a details podcast.
most of my end of which was funded by Nine West. So, you know, these adventures brought to you by the Hillsborough Outlet Mall and my, you know, part-time job out there.
I guess you could say that mine were paid by summers working for TNT Drilling.
Yeah.
Or however we did it. We did it by hook or crook.
Yeah.
No, nobody had a lot of money, but we had a lot of fun.
That's right. And so, yeah, this is the Mallapalooza kind of experience, right? Like we are remembering the mall as the emblem of the era. And
for people our age, the 90s were a very special time.
They were. They were.
When you said Nine West, I was going to make a joke about how I used to work at the Wet Seal.
You worked at Wet Seal?
I didn't know.
I worked at Forever 21.
Did you really?
No. No, I never worked at the mall. I was just a mall rat. Like, my parents split, and then we were living in an apartment over by the mall, like near the south. Like, I was within walking distance of the South Plains Mall. I know we're getting off of Hillsborough for just a second, but I'm just giving context of malls, how important malls were.
Yeah.
And I was like 11, 12 years old, and I would get on my skateboard and go over to the mall, and I would be there by myself, and I would go to Gadzooks. Mm-hmm. And there were like 16, 17 year old girls like working there, you know, mm-hmm. And I would just like hang out in there. And then there would be the other mall rats there, other rando kids I'd see from school. And we would go in the corridors between the stores,
mm-hmm.
And we would ring the bell. There's like a, you know, there's like, but behind the stores is a corridor where you ring the bell for deliveries. And we would go back there and ring all the bells and run through the corridors.
Good old fashioned fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah. And it's so surreal. It really feels like a post-apocalyptic, you know, scenario to be in this space now that it is completely derelict. And I say completely, there's something like 200 storefronts.
Wow.
There is now a nail salon in one space, which of course was not a, you know, was not an outlet. That's a latecomer. And there is the one last remaining outlet, Bath and Body Works.
Oh yeah, now and forever.
Works, man, they will survive the nuclear blast.
If there's one thing everybody needs, it's soap.
Right. And those plug-in things, for whatever reason.
Those, you know, those weird little balls, whatever they were made of, that melted in the bath and then released some kind of fragrant oil.
Yeah, yeah, all that stuff.
That's why young people have cancer.
Do you think, I was going to say, do you think whatever that substance was good or not good for the environment?
No, not good for the environment or us or anything. No. It's a mishigas.
But how else do you get fragrant oils into your bath water, Matthew?
I mean, you certainly couldn't pour them out of a bottle.
I have a 14-year-old daughter, so this is happening in real time in my house.
Like, am I remembering this correctly? Was Wet Seal kind of like the goth grown-up version of Forever 21? Were they kind of...
That's a question for Megan.
Sort of, yes. I mean, I loved Wet Seal back in the day. That was like, it was like Gadzooks and
it was like kind of goth Gadzooks. Like a combination of Gadzooks and Forever 21, with maybe a little Spencer Gifts thrown in there.
Yeah, exactly.
The Wet Seal is where I got. I got this. It was one of my favorite accessories. It was a necklace, and it was coveted by other people. I went into Wet Seal and I found they had just these big sunflowers, almost realistic looking sunflowers that had clips on the back. They were for people's hair. Mm-hmm. But I took it and I just put it on like a simple, like basically black shoelace loop. So it turned it into a necklace. Just used it basically as like a big pendant on a necklace.
You had a big sunflower.
And wore that around my neck. And people were super jealous of that. I never told anybody what it was. They thought it was just a really cool necklace, but all it was a hair clip on the end of a string.
Mm-hmm. It was a statement piece, Schaefer.
It was.
So we go into this space, you know, after we bought it, which is a crazy feeling by itself, right? Like you keep having these feelings as you think, you know, I remember the first time I spent the night in my own apartment, and that's a crazy, like, oh shit, I might be a grown up feeling.
Yeah.
And little did I know that well into my late 40s, I continue to have these like, oh shit, I might be a grown up kinds of experiences. And one of those is like, oh shit, we just bought an outlet mall. And I go into it and you have never seen so many keys in your life.
Is that right?
I am a person who has inherited jobs with keys. So it's not an unusual thing for me to sit down at a desk, open a drawer, and there's 30 keys. Not labeled, you know, some of them are in groups, you know, and you have no idea what any of them do. And you have this vague sense of foreboding, like, you know, one of these is to the water tower and like something bad is going to happen if you don't know which one.
Yeah.
But this was more keys than 30?
Dwarfed that by a factor of 10 at least.
I mean, if you figure every storefront probably has two or three keys.
Right. Right. And then there are
iterations
of rekeying.
Oh. Oh, God.
There are maintenance keys. There are master keys.
Yeah. Copies of keys.
And keys you don't think about, it, like water tower keys. So you're at 1,000 keys without even blinking.
It's yes.
You're obviously.
Exactly. Have you counted the number of keys that you have now?
No.
Because it would take too long.
Ask not how many keys are on the table.
It's like grains of sand.
Trying to make sense. So, and literally, like it took us like a couple of generations of employees, and by that I just mean, you know, someone who was not here with us when we started the project, but came in later and was like, "You guys are all crazy." And she put up a pegboard and labeled the pegs, and now and it's like an altar where the surface of the desk is just littered with all of these keys, and then rising up out of it is this pegboard with these numbers, and it's like there was chaos and then there was order, and you know, we're moving towards any minute now there's going to be self-actualization. It's going to be great. But this, like, this just,
and that's just one project on your table right now.
And so part of what we've been up to is going through the spaces to figure out, like, what could we do in these spaces? You know, so first it was, hey, the carnival that came for the eclipse wants to come back. Will we let them? Oh. Sure. What if we put them downtown during Churro Fest? Okay. Carnival says they want to be at the Outlet Mall. Oh, snap. Well, we're tearing the Outlet Mall down by Churro Fest, so can't do that. So, okay, well, what if we did the carnival sometime in April? And then we go, we'll have a thing. And from then, it's like, bum, 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 Momageddon.
That's how Momageddons are born.
Right, we've got to, like, find something to encapsulate what all of this was and how will we celebrate it. And so we sort of all looked at each other and came up with this idea of Momageddon and said, okay, well, there's got to be a 90s club experience because music is such a part of everybody's memories of that time. And we're like, okay, well, maybe, you know, if it's just, I mean, I think there were five or six of us kind of exploring the idea. And then we met up on a Thursday out there to see if there were any spaces that would work. And so we go confront the confounding, like, edifice of keys. And we just start opening spaces and going into them. And the feeling in these spaces is just crazy. You know, the
like ghosts.
Well, just the aesthetic of this bygone aesthetic. And then stuff that was just walked away from. And, you know, you go in the back and there's, you know, just all kinds of stuff, you know, like there's somebody's driver's license and there's, you know, furniture and there's like.
Old Nikes? Is there stock?
Dude, you're not shopping right now.
I want to find a sunflower and remake my necklace from the 90s. Right.
This is Momageddon.
Not in any stock, but like you know, posters and photos and just all kinds of weird stuff. And some of the spaces are so obviously what they are. Like there's a Subway that's so obviously a Subway. Sunglass Hut is crazy with all of the little shelves and mirrors everywhere. And then some of them, it's like, I have no idea what this space could have been, but you can remember like different iterations. So we go into this one space and it's all black with mirrors periodically throughout. And we're like, this is a club. Like nothing needs to be painted. Nothing needs to be anything. Like we'll vacuum the floor.
It's ready to go.
Ready to go. Absolutely ready to go.
I bet that was the Spencer Gifts.
There was not a Spencer Gifts ever that I know of.
Oh, right. I keep thinking Outlet Mall instead of, I'm thinking of Mall versus Outlet Mall.
Right. But so going, okay, if it's just the five of us who show up to this, then we will have a great time and that's what it will be. And then I think that night, Allison put a post together and put it on Facebook. And by the following morning, there were 130,000 hits. Which is just crazy. And I think has everything to do with that thing, Matthew, that you were talking about, where the mall just is it's a part of your life.
Absolutely.
And I think people in a huge part of Central Texas, lots and lots and lots of people who lived all over the place shopped at this outlet mall, at least at some point. And for several people, it was like a regular annual thing, even if they didn't live here. Like for us, it was all about working there.
Yeah.
But for lots of people.
That's true. Know, outlet malls are a destination for a wide. Yeah,
their families would go and do their school shopping there every year. And so every year, like it was ritual of spending this time and going to Hillsboro and doing this stuff, or you know, talk to somebody who grew up like way out in West Texas, but her grandmother lived in this area. And so whenever she went to go visit her grandmother, they would go to the outlet mall and they would have these experiences. And so I think it's just the iconic nature of the space in that time that makes it resonate with people. And so I don't know how many people are actually going to come to Malmageddon, but they care that something is happening with the mall. They care that we're tearing it down. And there's a lot of kind of ambivalence. You know, there's reverence and fun and, you know, good feelings about the heyday. And there's sorrow that it's going completely away.
I mean, just this conversation has, you know, it's bringing back so many pretty important memories to me. Like, now it would have been 1989, but you know, it was, for us, it was the beginning of the 90s, 1989. Like,
yeah.
Edie Raquel's Shooting Rubber Bands at the Stars record was out, which to me is the beginning of the 90s.
Yeah.
It's kind of the 90s thing ever, but to me, but 1989, I would have had my first French Kiss
in, ooh, la, la,
in Green's Arcade at Town and Country Mall, West Houston. I would ride my bike there. At least once a week. I would ride my bike there every Monday because I would get my lunch money, which was $10. And I never spent it on lunch because I, back then you could get, like, they would have hot deals on at Sam Goody on cassette tapes. So you could get usually for $6.99, you could get some new release, you know, maybe by Metallica or Poison or some other seminal band like that.
Yeah.
And then usually that would be enough left over for a slice at Sparrow's. So that was a Monday ritual, was getting my rock and roll. And then a slice of pizza. But then usually there'd be another trip. And I could ride, I think it was about a 20-minute bike ride from where I lived with my grandparents over to Town and Country Mall. There would be another social trip over there also. But, sorry, Greens was actually in Memorial City Mall. Sorry about this, guys. Memorial City Mall was more of a hike, but it was worth it because it was a bigger mall. That had a Gadzooks.
Yeah.
And that's where Greens, where you could smoke cigarettes.
Oof.
And French Kiss girls, Ashley Doak in this particular situation. Sorry to dox you, Ashley.
It's hot.
I'm sure she's got a different name now.
Megan, can I ask a couple of follow-up questions here?
Sure.
So you said the carnival wants to come back that was here for the eclipse. How did the eclipse go? Like, we had this same conversation about the eclipse. You were like, I don't know how many people are coming. How did that go?
Well, it was very successful, but there were not as many people as we were prepared for.
Ah.
I would rather have fewer people than we were prepared to deal with well than more people than we were prepared to deal with well.
Right, because have you seen Woodstock 99? There's a good example.
I can tell you from my experience owning and operating bars and restaurants, that is 100% true, Megan.
Yeah, yeah. And what I will say is that Hillsboro did a fantastic job of showing up. We had an event the Thursday night before the eclipse called Starlight Bar Night. We actually got a little grant from the Simons Foundation to do science-related outreach in advance of the eclipse. And so we brought in Geeks Who Drink to do trivia. We had space-themed jazz at the coffee shop. We had just a whole host of different eclipse and space-themed activities around downtown. So it was sort of like a pub crawl, but every space did something unique to them. And that was fantastic. It was like, the most fun people had in downtown Hillsboro, they said, in terms of like nightlife. You don't usually think of nightlife when you think of, Hillsboro.
You don't usually think of nightlife when you think of Hillsboro. You don't.
That's true. So, and then the weekend of the eclipse, downtown was fantastic. It was busy. There were people there from all over the world. There were folks everywhere. And some of the happiest people were people who had grown up in Hillsboro and came back to check it out. And those people were just absolutely, I was talking to one guy who is a couple of years younger than I was in school, and literally he was choking up. He was so moved by how well the town had represented itself, had shown up. We had, putt-putt around the courthouse. We had all these different food vendors. There were chairs, rocking chairs that we had been donated, like lent from different people around the community. So people said, hey, we'll loan you our rocking chairs so that you can put them out and welcome our guests.
Yeah, the rocking chair initiative stands out in my mind as something really cool. And
yeah, that was part of a thing we called Operation Welcome Mat. And the Operation Welcome Mat ladies are still doing stuff. Like after the eclipse,
they kept the band together.
And we're like, all right, what else can we make awesome? Now, out at the outlet mall, we were prepared to accept thousands of people out there. And there was this Cosmic Cowboy music festival. Those things, I think it's safe to say, flopped. The Cosmic Cowboy Music Festival, I think, miscalculated the fundamental makeup of the situation, right? Because it was a multi-day event happening at a time when it was predicted that there would be no hotel rooms available anywhere.
Yeah.
And it was, in Hillsboro, which is far from population centers, relatively speaking. And so if you lived in Dallas, you're not buying 3-day music festival tickets and driving back and forth every day. And the number of people who can physically fit in hotels in Hillsboro is just not that many.
Right.
And if you're coming for the eclipse, you're not coming for the music festival, mostly. So I think that was just a miscalculation on the part of the event organizers. But, and I say this with all respect, that wasn't the city's event.
Yeah.
Peace and love. Peace and love.
Into what the experience was in Hillsboro and around Hillsboro over that time. So, we feel really good about it. And in fact, we just had Starlight Bar Night again, this past Friday night, because the eclipse was just, literally a year ago. And so we reprised, Starlight Bar Night to commemorate and, pat ourselves on the back for everything that we pulled off last year.
Yeah, and why not? Yeah, have a fun thing for the unit. I don't think that it's unreasonable to say maybe there's a lesson to be learned there about the difference between a community organized grassroots event and a capitalist endeavor. Like, not to get too Marxist here, but people providing rocking chairs for people from out of town, that's a community event. Nobody's going to lose there. People are going to have a nice time sitting on rocking chairs, and then the rocking chairs can be put back on the porch when it's done.
Right.
Speculating on how many people are going to come to pay top dollar for a music concert in an abandoned outlet mall is another affair entirely.
Right.
And one in which you have to deal with musicians and artists, and those that's always right. A terrible idea.
Right. And so that's the thing, you know, Malmageddon is a very much bootstrapped.
Yeah, community party.
Yeah, exactly. Where if you want to smash a sledgehammer into a television, you can do that.
Okay.
Is I'm having trouble remembering. Is like rec rooms, is that a thing from the 90s, or is that something that's happening today that you can kind of retrofit?
Yeah, it's definitely more of a today thing, and it's sort of just capitalizing on the idea of stuff going boom.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Yeah, I was trying to remember. I was like, am I forgetting something about the 90s?
No.
I mean, I was smashing things, but that's because I was a 17-year-old boy
at that time.
I wanted to ask you another question. This is like a little bit of a fantasy or a daydream, maybe call it a pipe dream on my, is there a possible outcome where this retrofitted mall 90s nightclub is so insanely successful that y'all just keep doing it and the Hillsborough Outlet Mall just becomes a big party spot, like a new Burning Man or something?
No.
No, it's scheduled to come down.
Yeah. The long answer is, until you're standing there, I mean, the keys are kind of a hint, but until you're standing there going from space to space, it's unfathomable how vast.
Right. It is. As a business model, it just
43 acres. And none of it is enclosed, really, right? You know, so it's not like you could have. It's not like it creates a community. All of this, the center is all parking lot. And by the way, back in the day, I'm sure you've seen it, Schaefer. Like, I know you've seen the outlet mall. But back in the day, every parking space in that 43 acres would be full, and people were parked up and down the shoulder of the access road.
Is that right?
Two-way.
Wow.
And people were parked all the way. I mean, you couldn't get there.
The shoulder of the access road.
There was a trolley that would drive around and take people from one side of the mall to the other on the trolley. So they didn't have to hike all the way back to their car every time they wanted to go from one space to another. Like, it was packed, doesn't even begin to describe it. It was absolutely, completely overrun with people. And now, like, I can't even think, you know, the one space that we're making the 90s club, I mean, it probably wouldn't feel super full if you had, you know, 50, 100 people in there. You know, there, and that's just one space out of like 200 spaces. We are keeping, you know, I keep saying 25%. It's probably less than that. It's probably, you know, 16% or something of the buildings we are keeping. So the northernmost bank of buildings, a couple of spaces on the west side of it are getting sort of shaved off, and then a new exterior wall put in. So that is staying. There's a big building, standalone building on the back of the north end that used to be Gap and some other things. That building is staying.
I wish I had a map. And there's
one small building on the southwest side that used to be Polo, Ralph Lauren. That building is staying. And everything else is coming down. And there, we can put so many businesses just in the buildings that are staying, that I keep saying to people, look, if you've got ideas for cool stuff at the Outlet Mall, don't worry, we will have space for that.
There'll be room. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there a London Fog there?
I think there may have been.
Must have been. I have a jacket. It's a London Fog jacket that I got from the Outlet Mall in Hillsborough. I think it was in Hillsborough many, many years ago. And it was a weird jacket. It never fit me quite right. But I remember going there with my grandmother and her buying me that jacket.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Good times.
I mean, this all makes me very, very sad. We are grieving here, right?
We are grieving
and celebrating, right?
Okay.
It's both. You know, we're grieving the end of something, but it ended a long time ago. And at this point, right. It's been on life support. It's so sad to see it lying there. Like the saying of goodbye really happened a long time ago for those of us who see that space every day. It's past time. And we need to redefine Hillsboro. We need to redevelop the space and go in a new and forward-looking direction. And that's bittersweet too, because what is coming is not going to be as show-stopping, as transformative. You know, people aren't going to drive from, 70 to 100 miles from all directions to go to the, fast food places and small retail spaces and whatever larger things are coming.
Megan, my takeaway from this, there sounds like there's still a lot of available real estate. And if the 90s club really pops off, it sounds like we could keep something going in there and maybe it could still become a really big thing.
It is absolutely possible. It is absolutely possible.
I mean, do you feel like this is like a desperate situation? Like this is the lifeblood of a town that's leaving, or is this...
No, it's been empty for a quarter century, right? Or how long has it?
It's been
empty. Slowly dying, right?
It's been slowly dying for 20 years,
right?
You know, it was amazing for 10. It was probably strong for another 10, but for the last 15, it's been.
I mean, yeah. Don't get me wrong. I'm sure that the Hillsboro community would love to have it back in its full glory, but. There's lots of other things going on in Hillsboro, right?
Yeah. And coming back isn't a choice. You know, Macy's is closing.
Right, yeah.
Stores everywhere. Like, retail has been through three whole cycles of different, demand models and hot new versions of things.
The closest thing you get would be an Amazon fulfillment center.
Right. I mean, it's so past that. And the spaces really don't, it's not like the architecture is significant or it was so, well constructed and beautifully done that it's worth turning it into something else. It's not laid out practically for use as other things, and it's prime real estate on I-35. It's fantastically valuable space that something that is relevant to today's world, can occupy and provide value, and that's a good thing.
Well,
I'm just crying a bit. I'm sorry.
He's doing a full. He's for those of you who can't see it. He's leaning his head back like Charlie Brown. The only thing that's missing is
I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm upset about
droplets of tears coming out of his eyes.
I guess I'm the only one who's sad that malls are dead and dying or whatever.
You're not. It's just that for you haven't had to confront it the way that we have because we live it every day.
You buried your head in your sand and your hipster Central Austin life.
I mean,
you're the reason it's dying, Matthew.
You're right. I'm an urbanist.
That was rude of me.
Call me out on my own podcast. I don't know. I don't mean to bring up the sad parts of it.
I think the important story is about us taking control of our own destiny and being pragmatic and clear-eyed about what our options really are.
Well, we need spaces for people to gather.
Yeah. Well, but Matthew, downtowns are the spaces for people to gather.
Okay. Good.
But if we can stop, and I don't, money isn't the be all end all, but it's a good descriptor of forces at work, right? the outlet mall right now is not paying taxes. You know, I mean, the property is dramatically devalued because it's empty.
And also, you know, Matthew, the passion.
Concerns in that space will be contributing to the local economy, no matter what they are, even if it's a great big giant warehouse. It would be contributing to the local economy and helping pay for things like good sidewalks and parks and public spaces and even, you know, public events like concerts and activities and stuff.
And so the serpent eats its tail.
And we need those things so that we can take care of real people in real places.
Okay. I'll look towards the anew.
The passage of time is inevitably melancholy, and the things that mark that passage will cause a yearning in our hearts. But with everything ending, a new thing is beginning, and
that's right.
I mean, and our 90s dance club is just one of those things.
So when's the 90s dance club thing happening?
The 18th and 19th. It's going to be fantastic. So Hillsborough, among the crazy things that Hillsborough has that you would have no idea, we have a dinosaur museum.
Cool.
Texas Through Time. And the guy who runs the dinosaur museum, Andre Lujan, is an autodidact. He taught himself to be a paleontologist
too.
And he's been on Pawn Stars several times authenticating people's, you know, fossil and dinosaur bit items. He's been he was on the New York Times.
I have a niece who's going to go to that museum as soon as she is physically able, I assure you.
And he I cannot remember his DJ name.
Is he DJing at the club?
But yes, but Andre Lujan, the autodidact dinosaur guy, is our volunteer DJ Saturday night.
DJ Diplosaurus.
It's like DJ Dino Daddy or something. I think it's Dino Zaddy, maybe.
Dino Zaddy.
All right.
Wow.
I think that's it. If I'm not misremembering,
I'm gonna have to look up Zaddy on Urban Dictionary. But
And DJ Rob Bass Bibles is coming in for Friday night.
Wow, is that a Christian rap DJ?
Two different rump shaking experiences at our 90s club. We will have appointments, may even already be online for the Rage Room. We shot a promo video that a young man who's headed to film school named Henry Crawford is. Has put together our promo for the Rage Room with a soundtrack of Beastie Boys' Sabotage. The wall of the Rage Room has been graffitied to say "Rage Against Them All." We've got all the details. Well, maybe not all the details. There are actually lots of details still unfolding. But we are having so much fun at every step of this. It's going to be fantastic.
Well, you heard it here, One Magical Nation. Easter weekend, if you're looking for something to do with the fam, pile in there and get out to the outlet mall. Maybe Friday night you might see me there shaking it on the 90s dance floor. Who knows?
Fantastic. Oh, I forgot to mention, there will also be a video game trailer with retro games.
Oh, sweet.
For people to play. So that and the carnival and food. So there will be stuff for people of all ages, but after a certain hour, it is going to be, you know, more for the grown-ups.
More for those of us who can remember the 90s.
That's right. Or at least lots of the 90s, maybe not everything about the 90s.
Megan, have you ever heard of this genre of music called vaporwave?
No, I have not.
It's kind of a new thing the kids are listening to, vaporwave. And my 30-year-old cousin hipped me to it. I was like, what are you listening to? And he said, vaporwave. And I looked it up and I found this YouTube video with, it was like a 55 minutes of vaporwave. And it was VHS tape of the mall starting in like 1987. And then the next song is like 1989. And the next song's like 1991. And the next song is, it's like, it's not showing the dates, but the mall is changing through this, through this mix, this neon vaporwave mix. And then it shows you like the whole, you know, devolution of it all.
So you're saying that
pretty interesting.
DJ Dino Zaddy might be vaporwave and you don't even know it?
Well, you know what? As soon as I heard vaporwave, I said, oh, it's funny because my cousin lives in Portland. And I said, he played me this track. I go, what's vaporwave? He played me this track. And I go, have you heard the theme song to Portlandia? The theme song to Portlandia is vaporwave.
Huh, okay.
Okay.
Megan.
So anyway, that'll be a deep dive for everybody later.
Megan, but you're giving Snow White with that bird that Megan, just came up and chirped into your
phone. I'll send you the link to that. We'll post the link to that vaporwave mix where the mall dies.
Fantastic.
Momageddon, folks.
Momageddon. And then soon after, the whole thing will go boom.
Are we going to that, Chafee?
We'll have to see what we can do.
Okay,
about that.
Okay. Yeah. And then there's going to be a demolition?
Yes, the demolition will be, actually the demo will probably start around the 1st of June. So it won't be, you know, it's not like, you know, we'll be partying in the 90s and then bam. Yeah. But yes, demolition will be pretty soon, and then probably take 6 weeks or so, and then we'll find out what's coming next.
Oh, we don't know what's coming next yet?
Well, I know, but I'm not allowed
to say. Oh, I see. Holy cow. This is just like my kids hate a cliffhanger.
She's like buried in NDAs.
If I say it's time for bed and the show was a cliffhanger, they're like, no!
Who knows, folks? Maybe.
My follow-up question was, what's it going to look like when I'm whizzing by on I-35 next? What's it going to look
there
like?
There will be signs for places you can come and visit.
Oh my goodness! Is this a mystery? Oh, I'm not a fan of mysteries.
Are we doing
a mystery here, people?
Super excited. Think maybe we need to go search for clues. Maybe do a.
Oh no! Do we need do a mystery live, machine?
Do a live OMH.
We really are trying to figure out like how we can plant some Easter eggs throughout the experience without violating our NDA.
Fun. Oh, that's I'm excited about everything about this.
Okay, that's cool.
Thank you guys for giving me the opportunity to share my excitement with One Magical Nation.
Anytime, Megan. Thank you so much for joining us. This is a poetry podcast, Matthew. Perhaps it's time for some poems. Have you been interested in it?
I can't believe that, you know, Megan is another person who I know through my podcast that I have never met in person. The list is growing. There's this, you know, Lindsay Endeberg was talking about a parasocial relationship with me. And I have the same with like a bunch of your like friends of friends, you know. Megan is another person whom I've talked to on the phone in this forum, which is weird, you know, like we're conversing, but we're entertaining and we're trying to keep it moving forward. So I hope to meet some of these people in real life someday, or like after death, or, you know, something like that.
But I love this new phrase, parasocial relationship.
Well, I mean, but is it it's not a good thing. I don't know. Is it a good thing?
I think probably some of them are good and some of them are bad, but.
My kids are watching all these YouTubers and a bunch of them live in Austin, Texas. And I think I'm forming a parasocial relationship with Jake Carlini and Ryan Trahan.
I don't know them. Do you know that a big YouTuber podcaster just moved in above the front page?
No.
His name's Caleb Hammer.
Is that right?
Yeah. I guess he does like financial advice.
Oh. Like, well, these guys, millennials. These guys do fun, funny things. Like, we watched this thing, Ryan Trahan. He was trying to, we just watched it today. Ryan Trahan was trying to turn $2 into $4 and then $4 into $8. He's trying to double his money each day. And he did this challenge where he was doubling his money each day. And he was just like riding around Zilker Park, and he would go buy two pens at a convenience store and try to sell them. And he was doubling his money up. And then he had a business idea. He was going to do bath bombs for bros. Bros bath bombs. And he was like selling them all down South Congress and in Zilker Park. And they only got to about $1,200 on that challenge. You can be, if you double every day, you can be a millionaire in like a month.
$1,200 really get me out of a couple of jams.
I know. I mean, they did pretty well. But that kid's treating the whole thing with like, he's like, I have this secret business. It's all the way that it's edited and shown. It's all very clever and kind of tongue in cheek. I'm interested in these. Do you think the YouTuber who just moved in over the bar could have put Griffin on?
Oh, I thought you were going to say put us on.
Oh, well, we're...
Maybe we can do it. We can do a live show from the front page and have Caleb Hammer as our guest.
We're over the hill, I think. You know, I wanted to talk about Walt Whitman, but I'm really not prepared. But I'm gonna read a poem from Leaves of Grass.
Please do. Yeah.
But I'm trying to find one. Oh, here it is.
And you know, on Bob Dylan's newest record, Rough and Rowdy Ways, he has a song called I Contain Multitudes, which is, of course, a Walt Whitman reference.
Is that right?
So, check that one out, too, for next time.
I Contain Multitudes?
Yeah. It's a beautiful song.
I want to read this one called I Sing the Body Electric.
All right. Yes.
But I got to find it here on the internet. Can you vamp?
Rough and Rowdy Ways is, you know, kind of his, it feels a little bit like his swan song. It's a really good record. It has a 17-minute song about the JFK assassination called Murder Most Foul. It has just a lot of songs about, you know, the whole I Contain Multitudes song is about, you know, has at least refers to his lifetime of, you know, changing his personality, like we were talking about, you know, experimenting with different identities. Pretty cool stuff. A lot of fun things I've been working on. Ain't no use to sit and wonder why, even you don't know by now. Ain't only used to sit and wonder why, baby. It'll never do somehow.
Look, I Sing the Body Electric is like a really long poem.
You want to read the first
verse? So I'm just going to read the first verse. And we're going to talk about Walt Whitman, dadgummit, in our next podcast. I mean, not to get everybody excited, too excited, but this podcast is going to turn into a lot of Walt Whitman talk going forward.
Maybe we should call up Ada and talk about Walt Whitman with her, or maybe, you know, one of my other poets, Brendan Lorber, or...
Yeah, let's get an actual poet in here instead of just a buffoon.
Just a couple of bonehead.
Yeah, but look, I'm gonna read a little... Let me say this about The Leaves of Grass. It is a tome that I've always seen amongst the classics, you know? And Amy had a copy of it, and I just picked it up and started reading it. I didn't expect to love it and have it give me a whole new perspective on my country, you know? Yeah. But it has. And what I'm struck by about it is that it feels so modern. It was written 175 years ago.
That is amazing, a bunch of it, isn't it? Yes,
the same thing. But it feels, and that's at the essence of great art. That's what this podcast is about. Is universal feelings, you know, and how you can say something and in 178 years, somebody goes, wow, that's really fresh, man. And I'm reading through this stuff and I'm like, man, that is prescient and fresh. And wow. And maybe what America needs to hear right now, you know, it's a little hard to be patriotic these days for me. But anyway, let me read some Walt Whitman and we'll get out of here. Verse 1. I sing the body electric. The armies of those I love engirth me, and I engirth them. They will not let me off till I go with them, respond to them, and discorrupt them, and charge them full with the charge of the soul. Was it doubted that those who corrupt their own bodies conceal themselves? And if those who defile are living are as bad as they who defile the dead? And if the body does not do fully as much as the soul? And if the body were not the soul, what is the soul? The love of the body, of man or woman, balks account. The body itself balks account. That of the male is perfect, that of the female is perfect. The expression of the face balks account. But the expression of a well-made man appears not only in his face. It is in his limbs and joints also. It is curiously in the joints of his hips and wrists. It is in his walk, the carriage of his neck, the flex of his waist and knees. Dress does not hide him. The strong, sweet quality he has strikes through the cotton and broadcloth. To see him pass conveys as much as the best poem, perhaps more. You linger to see his back and the back of his neck and shoulder side. I could go on. I love it.
Wow, I was enjoying it. I feel like
it's the stream of consciousness he achieves through, and I think part of it is casting off convention, you know? It's in this American moment of like, we need our own poets. We need our voices.
I was just going to say,
to talk about our country, our virtues and our vices.
I was just going to say, I feel like a giant sprawling, passionate poem about America is probably just what America needs right now.
I didn't bring my book over. When we have the actual podcast about Wild Women, I'll bring the book. But in the first part of the book, there are these talks about all the different types of Americans, you know, and maybe Leaves of Grass could be helpful in this moment of chaos and trouble.
I'm gonna text Brendan Lorber and say, hey, will you come on a podcast?
Okay.
And let's talk about Walt Whitman as cure for America's current malaise.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know it's not going to cure America's current malaise. One magical hour.
Our terrible choices.
It makes it a little better. But
yeah. Cured my malaise just talking to you, buddy.
That's good. Me too. Me too. And the poor are the choices.
Sweet of the wine.
what you put in is gonna come right back to you. Come on, cash back. What you put in.